First case today is Tom McKenna and the McKenna Ranch against Steve Witt. This case is set for 1 hour. May I have the intro of appearances, please? First for the plaintiff.
Good morning, Chief.
Applicant? Yes.
Good morning, Chief Justice David Show, on behalf of the appellants, Tom McKenna and McKenna Ranch.
Mr. Show, thank you. Speaking for Steve Witt? Yes.
Good morning, Your Honor. Kate Ryan, Assistant Attorney General.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Counsel, as indicated, this case is set for 1 hour. That means, of course, each side has a half an hour. You're going to keep track of your own time. Whenever you're ready, you may go ahead, Mr. Sheehy.
May it please the court, David Show, on behalf of the appellants, Tom McKenna and McKenna Ranch. Unless otherwise noted, I'm simply going to refer to the appellants as McKenna. We are here today on McKenna's appeal of the District Court, the Water Division 2's order and finding of the abandonment of the Sanchez Ditch in its entirety. McKenna has appealed this decision on two grounds. The first grounds is McKenna asserts that the division engineer did not comply with CRS 3792-401 in the abandonment of the Sanchez Ditch. Second, McKenna believes that the water court erred by concluding that the Sanchez Ditch was abandoned in its entirety. Specifically, McKenna asserts the evidence in the record does not support the water court's decision of abandonment of the Sanchez Ditch. Prior to talking about these two points, I did want to provide just the court with a little bit of background on the Sanchez Ditch itself. It's decreed for 4 CFS out of the Cacharas River to irrigate approximately 200 acres. The decreed acreage is 200 acres of McKenna Ranch. It's important to note that the Sanchez Ditch is the last water right on the Cacharas. There are no other water rights below it that can call it out. There's some confusion a little bit about the decreed headgate, but there's at least 3 points of diversion for the headgate at Sanchez Ditch historically. There's the historical headgate, there is a point moved upstream to a concrete dam, and there's a third point, which is the current point where McKenna took the water right, which is in between these 2 points. The Sanchez Ditch is testified to by the assistant division engineer in this matter is actually quite evident it exists. It can carry water with very little amount of maintenance. This is something important to note because McKenna had 2 other water rights that were on the abandonment list. One of those was the Sanchez Brothers Ditch. The Sanchez Brothers Ditch is a decreed water right that diverts from Santa Clara Creek. There is essentially no evidence of existence of the Sanchez Brothers Ditch. That is, essentially, Mother Nature has reclaimed that ditch structure and that ditch system. That's not the same true with the Sanchez Ditch itself. The Sanchez Ditch is quite evident, is testified to by the assistant division engineer, Mr. Steve Kastner, and is quite readily apparent on the aerial photographs themselves. It's clear, when McKenna was reviewing this, that the water right holders clearly walked away from the Sanchez Brothers Ditch. The same cannot be said about the Sanchez Ditch. This leads me to my first argument.
Can I ask a clarifying factual question?
Yes, sir.
Since 1982, was any crop grown from water through the Sanchez Ditch on the original decreed place of use?
Mr. McKenna testified that native grasses were grown underneath the Sanchez Ditch.
How many years and what years show the record?
So, in the record themselves, there was no evidence between 1982 and, I believe, 1994. Mr. McKenna's notes and journals indicate that diversions were made under Sanchez Ditch and irrigation did occur several years in the 90s, as well in the 2000s and 2003. There's approximately, I believe, 5 entries that showed diversions, or 5 different years where diversions were made under the Sanchez Ditch, irrigating native grasses under the Sanchez
Ditch. And the native grasses were used how?
They were pasture grass. Mr. McKenna testified that the McKenna Ranch is primarily a working cattle ranch. He used the pasture underneath the Sanchez Ditch as winter pasture grounds for a portion of his operation.
And the water right would have been in priority during the winter? Are you saying there were ditch diversions during the winter? Or?
No, Your Honor. I believe the ditch diversions occurred during the irrigation season. I guess the traditional irrigation season, the Arkansas River being March 1st through October 31st. But there are water rights in the Cacharas that do divert during the winter. There were no diversions, however, that Mr. McKenna testified or that I'm aware of that occurred during the non-irrigation season of March 1st, October 31st.
Just
to clarify, I think the irrigation occurred during the irrigation season to bring up and grow the native grass. Then the native grass was used as pasture during the winter period or the fall period.
Okay, thank you.
The first argument raised by McKenna is that the division engineer did not comply with his statutory obligations in abandoning the Sanchez Ditch. Legislature has mandated that the division engineer every 10 years review all the water rights within his or her district and devise a list of those water rights that he believes have been abandoned. It's a very set out specific process and procedure. The division engineer is required to prepare this list by July 1st and in this abandonment proceeding by 2010. Then he's to mail out this abandonment list to all of the water right owners of record. And he's supposed to publish this list, and there's a process that allows the water holders to file an administrative protest with Mr. Witte, in this case, the division engineer, to his placement of that water right on the abandonment list. And there are several procedures where Mr. Witte, the division engineer, has to revise his abandonment list based on protests and facts that he's learned. And the division engineer is to submit this revised abandonment list to the water courts to be published. There's a very set out specific procedure here on how the division engineer may abandon a water right pursuant to his codified authority at 3792.401.
Could you address the threshold issue of whether that was properly preserved? It seems in the reply brief you seek refuge in the notion that this is jurisdictional, and I was kind of puzzled by that assertion, but if you could just speak to that problem that we confront at the outset.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe one of the arguments raised by the division engineer, which I presume we'll hear after I proceed, is that the issue of whether the division engineer complied with Section 401, Title 37, Article 92, 401, I'll just refer to it as Section 401, whether that was properly raised either at the trial court for it to be appealed on this level. The jurisdictional argument was raised as an alternative argument. When you look at the record, McKenna very clearly raised the compliance with Section 401 in both its trial brief and as well as the trial management order. That is, both parties sought out stipulations from the other party of their compliance with specific portions of 401. When you also look at the record, the exhibits introduced by the Attorney General at the trial court as well as the testimony solicited indicates that there was knowledge that compliance with 401 is a threshold issue that even your prima facie burden proceeding forward with this abandonment list. So I would argue that no, this was not an issue that was raised for the first time in both the briefs and in the actions of the parties. In addition to that, if it was, if the court says, well, fine, it was never properly raised before the trial court, then the alternative argument is that this is a jurisdictional problem. That is, in subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time during the proceeding. So even if it wasn't properly raised as a jurisdictional issue, this court can review that issue in this instance, in this appeal.
And can I follow up on that? Because I'm still a little, and perhaps share the same puzzlement at the jurisdictional aspect of that. How is the preparation of the list by a certain deadline render that jurisdictional here?
The legislature mandated that the division engineer prepare this list by July 1st. There are several other timelines and timeframes in there that says, you know, the division engineer shall do this by this date. The protester, McKenna, this shall do this by this date. It seems to me that all of those dates are jurisdictional. That is, if you miss one, that you are barred, want to think about as a statute of limitations or as a jurisdictional issue from going forward. And that's the argument here.
But I suppose you're simply drawing that inference. In other words, the statute mandates that the list be prepared by a particular deadline, and you're drawing the inference from that. If it's not prepared by that particular deadline thereafter, then the court lacks any power to proceed on that abandonment request.
I think under Section 401, that's correct.
Okay, but you're not pointing to anything specific in the text that aims at a specific jurisdictional bar.
I think the language, at least in my mind, where it says the division engineer shall prepare, there is some case law that was cited in the brief that when there is a mandated timeline, words such as shall, no later than a certain date, that infers at least legislature's intent of it being a jurisdictional issue.
And in your mind, what is the purpose of that process then? I mean, from your perspective as representative of an owner of such a right that might be abandoned, is it simply notice?
No, I think the provision, yes, notice is I think one of the important issues. I think when we're talking specifically about section 4.1a, which is the provision that McKenna cites the division engineer failed to comply with, it requires the division engineer to have prepared the list by July 1st. I think the purpose of that is we're talking about the abandonment of the water right. This is very, very serious. We're talking about the forfeiture and stripping of someone's property right. I think legislature wanted the division engineer to be put on notice and prepare this list so he's not, let's say, getting up on June 30th and saying, well, I was supposed to do this list. I'm going to call up my water commissioner, talk to my assistant division engineers, and try to throw something together. I think the purpose of that July 1st deadline was to have the division engineer prepare, think about, and start developing this list when he's going to assert that there's going to be an abandonment of someone's vested property right.
Thank you.
Well, isn't the logical direction there, the legislature simply gets your act in order because the real issue is publication of the list and the tabulation? I mean, is this the whole division tabulation? I mean, these are all the water rights in the Arkansas?
For the abandonment list?
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, so, yeah, just kind of precatory, you know. Make sure you get the list in order so you can get it published within the month. It was published in July, was it not?
It was. It was both mailed to McKenna in July in accordance with 2B, and then it was also published in a paper for 4 consecutive weeks in compliance.
Yeah, so the process can't go forward under the statute unless the adjudication can't go forward and the protest administrative or quasi-administrative proceeding in front of the division engineer can't go forward until the list is prepared, correct? But the real thing is that initiates the water rights proceeding is the publication and a notice to the owners of the water rights that may be affected.
Yes, Your Honor, there are several steps involved there, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I can follow up on that just for a minute here, this is a special statutory proceeding. There's case law, like, for example, in eminent domain cases where you cannot proceed with eminent domain if you don't comply strictly with the statute. And that's the argument here, Your Honor, is that strict compliance with the statute is necessary. The severity of it, we can argue and debate that all we want, but still the process has to be complied with and conformed. And you can, I guess, look at it this way, Your Honor, is, well, what's the difference if they published it and did comply with 1A? We could play that game, I think, with all the deadlines. What happens if Mr. Witte only published the newspaper on August 2nd as opposed to July 31st? What if McKenna filed his protest 2 days after the deadline? There probably is no injury in fact, but the deadlines are the deadlines, particularly when you have a special statutory proceeding seeking to forfeit someone's water rights. The only logical conclusion, at least in my mind, is that when we're talking about this, the procedures have to be followed in accordance with the statute.
Do you equate strict compliance with the statute with a jurisdictional requirement?
I believe that's correct. I believe that
one would think that a jurisdictional requirement might actually even go further and suggest that the right could not be waived. A party, regardless of his context of his conduct, could not be stopped from asserting it. Are you going that far?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's correct. That is, once the jurisdictional matter is lapsed or passed or the deadline hasn't been met, it essentially acts as a bar to going forward with the rest of the process. This is one case that was cited in the briefs, was RRL. It was extensively discussed and briefed, and RRL stands for this proposition, particularly in the abandonment of a water right. Now, it's in the context of a conditional water right, but we certainly see that this court saying, if you're going to abandon a water right, It has to be followed. The procedures have to be followed to a T. And if the procedures are not followed, you don't get to pass a bill. You don't get to abandon a water. That's the significance of the RRR case that was cited in the news.
Doesn't the case law say once it's abandoned, and the beneficiaries are those in priority who can use the water, and apparently, you know, the prior owner didn't have a need for the water, and therefore the system demands this abandonment procedure. Does it not really to have a vitality to the idea that you simply can't blow good water into a lost right later on?
I think that's correct. Once a water right's been abandoned, but there are multiple ways to abandon a water right. This is just one process that a water right can be abandoned. It's the statutory process that legislature demanded the division engineer to review and look at in terms of whether or not the water is being abandoned. Other water users can file a declaratory judgment action or seek to have a water right abandoned. Or the division, and so there are other processes. This isn't the sole process to abandon a water right, Your Honor. That leads me into the second portion of my argument, or at least our appeal, that is the Sanchez ditch was not abandoned. The law on abandonment is well established. You don't need to recite that and go over that. But again, the critical issue in any abandonment case is intent. Now, let's just deal with the elephant in the room, and that was this receipt issue. McKenna presented a receipt to the water court that held out that a gentleman by the name of Scott Davis did extensive work on repairing and fixing the Sanchez ditch and diverting water, building a diversion dam, diverting water down the ditch. Mr. Davis, as a rebuttal witness for the state, testified he did all that. He testified he built the diversion dam, he straightened and helped work on the Sanchez ditch, repaired the Sanchez ditch, turned water into the Sanchez ditch, and was paid for that work. At the end of the day, he walked away and left. What had happened is I had asked Mr. McKenna for the receipt of that work, and he indicated that he would provide a receipt of that work. It turned out that neither Mr. McKenna or Mr. Davis had the original receipt. Neither party could recall the exact work that was produced, but Mr. Davis ended up giving McKenna a blank receipt to fill out and, to best of their knowledge, 10 years after the fact, to put in that receipt the work that occurred. Ironically, the actual original receipt was found, and it doesn't quite match the exact numbers that were put in the receipt. But it does show that Mr. Davis did significant amount of work on the Sanchez ditch. It was clear that the water court did not like the way that their receipt was presented. They called it a prevaricated receipt, meaning it was untruthful and a lie. Mr. Davis' testimony, however, proves that it was not prevaricated. It was not a lie or untruthful. Yes, the receipt was not an original receipt. But Mr. Davis testified he built the diversion. Mr. Davis testified he helped fix and repair the Sanchez ditch. Mr. Davis testified that he did was paid for this work.
Let me ask you a question. Good morning. What do we do with the credibility determination? That's, how do you get over that hurdle?
I believe that the credibility is something that the trial court can make, and this court can perhaps overturn it if it's a clear abuse of discretion. We can fall back at least on the standard of abandonment is whether the record is wholly supported by the evidence. I think the finding that it's a prevaricated receipt is not supported by the evidence in the record. Mr. Davis testified that he did the work. He built a diversion dam. He was paid for the work. And so if we're couching in terms of the abandonment itself, the record does not support that the receipt is a lie or is untruthful.
All right, thank you.
Could I ask one question there? You said something about abuse of discretion. I take it here are we in agreement that the court is acting as a trier of fact here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Okay. The court is the trier of fact in this. The point with this being, however, is that the water court seemed to have discounted all of the remaining testimony of McKenna, and it can do that in determining a character witness, but McKenna did testify that he irrigated numerous times. There are several farm journal entries that were discounted, that he seeded this pasture with native grass, he aerated the ground underneath the Sanchez ditch, he seeded it, he use this acreage as for cattle and for horses, for his winter pasture ground. But throwing all of that testimony out, which the water court did, there is a whole host of other evidence that the water court seemed to improperly dismiss as well. That is the hiring of Mr. Felt to represent McKenna, and Mr. Felt had numerous conversations with the water commission about the Sanchez ditch. McKenna hired W.W. Wheeler and Associates to provide engineering and other advice related to the water rights of McKenna Ranch, including the Sanchez ditch. Mr. Felt was in communication with other members of the water bar and cases that were filed, change cases that were filed in the Cacharis River. There was quite a bit of work done by other parties, real estate agents investigating this matter on behalf of McKenna.
Would you talk a little bit about the law of the presumption, the 10-year presumption, and then the burden that your client has to overcome the presumption of abandonment, and how the facts, the water court didn't find facts that support that preponderance of the evidence burden you had to carry?
Correct, Your Honor. So in this proceeding, the initial burden is with the division engineer. The division engineer has to show that there's been, at least for this statutory proceeding, 10 years of non-use of the Sanchez ditch. The water court found that the division engineer in this case met that presumptive burden. So then the burden then shifted to McKenna to rebut that presumption. And the water court...
By a preponderance of the evidence.
By a preponderance of the evidence, correct, Your Honor. The water court in this instance took the totality of the circumstance. They didn't find that 10 years of non-use was a strict abandonment. There's nothing in the water court order that says there was no use of the water right for 10 years, we're going to abandon the water right. Rather, the water court took a totality of the circumstances, and review of how this water right was abandoned. And what it really focused in was it dismissed all of McKenna's testimony, even the ones that were undisputed, and focused really on five things that were presented by the division engineer. The first was the diversion records. The diversion records that the division engineer has shows no use of the Sanchez ditch from whether you take it's 1962 to 1982, and there seems to be an erroneous entry, perhaps 1982, but it was stipulated that there was irrigation that occurred in 1982. And then from 1982 to 2010, the state's diversion records don't show any use of the Sanchez ditch. The state's diversion records, however, are just that. They are the state's diversion records. They don't prove or disprove that irrigation of the Sanchez ditch occurred. The assistant division engineer testified that the diversion records are incomplete. They have erroneous entries. Can be hard to understand. And for all of those reasons, diversion records alone don't seem to be sufficient enough to suggest that there's been abandonment of a water right. The state also focused on a couple of other issues. For example, there was no headgate for the ditch. That's true that McKenna, during his years of ownership, never replaced a headgate to functional standards for a permanent headgate. But there was plenty of evidence that a headgate and diversion dam was installed at one point. Mr. Davis testified to that. So it's incorrect to say that there has not been a headgate for the Sanchez ditch when Mr. Davis testified he installed a diversion device, dam, and a headgate for this ditch. There's not a permanent structure, but there was, at one point, a diversion dam and a headgate. There was testimony from Mr. Burgosh, the water commissioner, Mr. Porcentino, a neighbor who drove by this property. They said several times they'd never seen irrigation. The problem with this is that you could not see the irrigated fields underneath the Sanchez ditch, its location and proximity from the highway in which they're driving by. Mr. Porcentino testified to this. In fact, he said he didn't even know that when I cross-examined him that there were irrigated fields behind McKenna's house. That seems to be all the evidence supporting the abandonment at this point in time. Whereas McKenna has several other instances and documents of intent that show that he did not have the intent to abandon the water. Yeah, that's the critical and key issue in this case. For all those reasons, we don't believe that the record supports the finding of abandonment as ordered by the water.
Could I ask you one question? Yes. This question about intent to abandon the right has always seemed to be a slippery one. We've said it many times, but what is your understanding of what that intent means? I mean, presumably, nobody intends to give away a valuable right. So what does the intent mean?
You'd be surprised, Your Honor, and this is one of the distinctions I tried to make earlier in the Sanchez Brothers ditch. I would say there clearly was an intent of the water right holder to walk away from that water right. There is no existing structures. You cannot see it really on the ground. No one really quite knows where it's at. And recall, Your Honor, there are probably close to 400 water rights on just the Division II abandonment list. I would venture to guess that 97% of those were not protested. So clearly there are instances where a water right holder walks away from the water right and has the intent to say that this water right's never in priority, or this water right is not sufficient for what it was intended to be, was decreed for. And so there are clear cases of intent when a water owner or water holder walks away from the water right and does not have the intent to divert it.
And walk away, do you mean by that that they just don't do anything, or do you have to show an intent that they don't want to have that right anymore?
I think both. I think there's instances of both, Your Honor. Chief Justice, I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
You certainly may do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Ryan?
May it please the Court. We'd like to discuss both issues presented for review by McKenna, beginning with the purportedly jurisdictional issue of the Division Engineer's compliance with deadlines in the abandonment statute. As this is a legal issue, it is reviewed de novo, and we ask that you first rule that the administrative deadlines in the abandonment statute are not jurisdictional, and second, that the specific issue presented by McKenna was not properly preserved for appeal. We will then move on to addressing the second issue, the Water Court's determination of abandonment. The Water Court made this determination by weighing the evidence in the record and assessing the credibility of the witnesses. As such, the Water Court's determination should not be overturned unless you are to find that the evidence in the record is wholly insufficient to support the Water Court's abandonment determination. We ask, based on the strong record, that you affirm the Water Court's determination of abandonment. But first, we'd like to address the statutory deadline compliance issue. At the outset, please take careful note that McKenna has already waived personal jurisdiction in this matter. In the trial management order on page 4 at paragraph 7, McKenna stipulated to the fact that the court has jurisdiction over the subject matter of the proceeding and over all persons and water rights affected thereby. Nonetheless, we do feel that it is worthwhile to discuss with you the merits of the jurisdictional issue, as we also discuss the reasons for which we believe the issue presented by McKenna has not been properly preserved for appeal. McKenna has presented two very different iterations of the specific question asked to the different courts. To the Water Court, McKenna asked the court to address whether the engineers met the statutory deadline for publication of the abandonment list. To this court, McKenna asks whether the division engineer met the statutory deadline for preparation of the abandonment list. We pointed out the significant discrepancy in our answer brief, and in response in its closing brief, McKenna has asserted that this is a jurisdictional issue which may be addressed at this time. As we begin the discussion of why this is not a jurisdictional issue, please note there are three key deadlines at issue. First, the July 1st, 2010 deadline for preparation of the abandonment list. Second, the July 31st deadline for the abandonment list to be published in a county newspaper for 4 weeks and for notice to be given to water users affected. And then a year and a half later, there is a December 2011 deadline for the engineers to publish the abandonment list, or I'm sorry, to file the abandonment list as a water court case. We make three notes on the topic. First, the administrative deadlines in the abandonment statute are directive, not jurisdictional. Second, even if the abandonment list had been prepared a week late, there would be nothing but harmless error. Third, if McKenna had asked the water court to address the preparation deadline, which is what he asks this court to do, the water court could have resolved that issue by making simple observations from the record.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? Just tell me what you think that first deadline means. What burden is imposed by that deadline?
The first deadline is a direction given by the General Assembly on when the engineers should have the abandonment list prepared every 10 years. The Supreme Court has not addressed, but the Colorado Court of Appeals has addressed, that generally, statutory deadlines given by the General Assembly to administrative agencies are directive in nature, not jurisdictional.
But I don't even want to talk about jurisdiction. Okay. I know you do, but right now I don't. I just want to focus on that. What does the engineer have to do by the first? And if he doesn't do it, what happens? And I guess
the direction in the statute was for the engineer to prepare the abandonment list by the first.
And you concede that that didn't happen here, or it did happen here.
Well, McKenna,
we don't know.
McKenna did present the water court and has directed this court to review a specific exhibit, Exhibit P3. And that exhibit is the printout of the abandonment list that was published with the newspapers pursuant to the July 31st deadline. On every page of that document after the first page, there's a simple headnote with no text that has on it the date of July 7th. 2010. Then there's no text, and as we point out in our answer brief, it's absurd to think that the engineers could have prepared and published the abandonment list on that single day. And in fact, if you look at the first page of that very same document, it has a date of July 1st, 2010 on it. And that date is the date at which, according to that document, water users could go to the offices of the division engineer to inspect the abandonment list should they choose to do so. Now, we're not asking this court to make findings of fact regarding those dates, but this is a good example of why, if McKenna had asked this water court to address the same question he asks this court to address, the water court could have simply looked at the record and seen that the abandonment list was timely prepared. So we do believe that this issue was not properly preserved for appeal.
And I guess, so when your opposing counsel stood up and said that we raised this issue in our trial management, your argument is that those are, his raising that was not specific enough to the preparation issue?
Absolutely. There are general statements regarding compliance with Section 401 in the McKenna trial brief. And in the trial management order in the issues presented section, there's not even a mention of Section 401.
Right. So I guess you're saying they raised the general argument of noncompliance with 401, but not the specific preparation argument.
That's correct. Although he did raise the specific publication argument to the
Water Court. Don't those two go together? I guess that's my question for you. I mean, I'm trying to figure out if there's a distinction, like there's step one, preparation, step two, publication. Maybe you can just help me with that. Are there two steps?
We think there absolutely is. There's a step one, preparation, and between the preparation date and the publication date, there's not a single water user that necessarily sees the abandonment list unless they choose to ask the engineers about the abandonment list. So we actually believe that the deadlines that are provided in the abandonment statute are simply directive, especially those that are associated with preparation of the abandonment list. The deadlines associated with publication do have due process protections attached.
And you don't think, though, the preparation command has a similar due process implication.
No, because there's not a single water user who would be alerted that their water rights are on the abandonment list because of that deadline.
They would have to go look at the list.
They would. And there's a year and a half worth of due process protections built into the abandonment process that happens every 10 years. So there are these early 2010 preparation and publication deadlines, but water court jurisdiction doesn't attach until after the abandonment list appears in the water court resume and has been filed as a case.
Right. And I understand that, but I guess I'm going to stop asking questions, but I just want to press you one more time. If the list is not prepared by July 1st, and it's directive, and you have not complied with that directive, what happens?
Nothing. Nobody would know, Your Honor.
Okay. But there's no consequence
for water users. They've had every single instance of notification met as long as the July 31st deadline for publication and notification is met.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
Well, the process that goes on for the year after the publication is an administrative process to allow a water user to have a mistake corrected or oversight or a questionable situation sort of skipped over and maybe for the next decennial.
It is. There are deadlines for the engineers to revise the abandonment list during this time. So the engineers have to look at hundreds of water rights in preparing the abandonment list. And so water users are notified just on that initial appearance of their water rights on the abandonment list. And many water rights are indeed removed from the abandonment list when it is filed a year and a half later with the water court. Also during this time, Mr. McKenna himself did engage with the division engineers at every administrative step of the abandonment process, and then he engaged in the judicial portion of the abandonment process with the water court. Mr. McKenna did file an objection with the division engineers to his water rights being placed on the abandonment list. And in fact, in November 2011, Assistant Division Engineer Steve Kastner actually went to the McKenna Ranch and inspected the water rights that were subject to abandonment with Mr. McKenna's son, Ross McKenna. So there was significant due process protection afforded to Mr. McKenna. We'd like to move on to the abandonment determination made by the water court, which we feel is truly the heart of this case. The water court uses a two-step process to make an abandonment determination. The proponent of abandonment must first establish a presumption of abandonment by demonstrating an unreasonable period of time without beneficial use of a water right. If this is done, the burden of proof then shifts to the water user to prove they had no intent to abandon. The water court is directed to weigh all the evidence in the record and to assess the credibility of the witnesses, and then to make an abandonment decision using a preponderance of evidence standard. The abandonment determination should not be overturned unless the evidence is wholly insufficient to support that determination. In proceedings below, that is exactly what was done. On the first day of trial, the engineers presented the testimony of the assistant division engineer and the water commissioner. The water commissioner used diversion records to show that water had not been diverted to the Sanchez Ditch since at least 1982. The assistant division engineer presented the court with an expert water availability analysis, and the court examined that analysis, showed that it demonstrated that water was available to the Sanchez Ditch on average during the period from 1982 through the case for at least 63 days per year. After this evidence had been presented, the water court ruled that the engineers had met their prima facie burden in the case and that an intent to abandon had been established. It was at this point that Mr. McKenna took the stand McKenna took the stand to provide testimonial and documentary evidence of his intent not to abandon, but it was during his testimony that his case fell apart for two significant reasons that were associated with one particular event to which Mr. McKenna testified. Mr. McKenna testified about the 2003 event during which he hired Scott Davis to come work on the Sanchez ditch to get water into it with him. Mr. McKenna presented the water court with choreographed photos, a prevaricated receipt, and his personal ranch journal entries in order to document this event. Mr. McKenna testified before the water court as if the receipt he presented to that court were the real thing. He testified about the date on which he received that receipt, even though we know this not to be true, based on the rebuttal testimony of Mr. Davis. The engineers called Mr. Davis as a rebuttal witness, and when presented with that receipt, Mr. Davis testified that he had never seen the handwriting on that receipt before. He testified that 2 to 3 months before trial, Mr. McKenna came to him and asked for a receipt of the 2003 event. Mr. Davis did not have a receipt, neither an original nor a copy, and so he provided Mr. McKenna with a blank receipt, and Mr. Davis testified that neither he nor anybody at his direction filled in that receipt. So the first main problem with the testimony regarding this event was that McKenna had presented a prevaricated receipt to the court. Based on the fact that that receipt was prevaricated, the water court held below in its order of abandonment that it discounted or discredited all of the ranch journal entries that had been submitted to the court by McKenna. Now, these entries were the only documentation of irrigation use besides Mr. McKenna's own word that had been presented to the court. The second very big problem with the testimony surrounding this 2003 event was, as the water court held in its order, that this was a staged event. This was a time at which McKenna got water into the Sanchez ditch, but that water was not used for the beneficial decreed use of irrigation. The water court held that the only reason this was done was for purposes of misleading the engineers and the water court in the course of the abandonment process. We feel it's our duty to bring to your attention two early Colorado Supreme Court cases which stand for the proposition that diversions must be made in good faith to avoid abandonment. These cases are not in our briefs below. We apologize for that fact, but we did provide Mr. Shohet with notice of the two cases, which are the Colorado Supreme Court decision in 1913 of Parsons v. Fort Morgan Reservoir and Irrigation Company, 56 Colo 146, and the 1916 Colorado Supreme Court decision in Arnold v. Ralph, 61 Colo 316.
Can I ask you a question, a clarifying question on this 2003 event?
Yes.
Is it undisputed that a tire or tires were put in the street to get water in the ditch?
Yes.
That's not contested.
That's not contested. I believe I can see how you might think it was contested. Mr. Davis did testify that they did not repair the head gate or the dam for the Sanchez ditch in 2003. Instead, they just put a big tire in the Cacharas River in order to get water into the ditch.
So the water's in the ditch, but the water court found that it wasn't used to irrigate this pasture grass?
That is correct. Mr. Davis testified that in 2003 they were not irrigating anything, they were just putting water in the ditch. Additionally, the water court did examine the photographs, which it said were choreographed photographs, and it observed in the photographs that there was some water in a ditch which was probably the Sanchez ditch, but that there was not a depiction of anything being irrigated in those photographs.
In other words, there was no lateral or rows or any way to get the water out of the ditch onto the field, and no evidence that anything was being grown?
No, there was no evidence other than the word of Mr. McKenna and his ranch journal entries. And the ranch journal entries the court specifically held in its order were entirely discredited. Because the receipt was prevaricated, the water court had no reason to believe that those handwritten ranch journal entries were trustworthy either.
And there's no other evidence that water got into the ditch in any of these other years? This is a one-time event?
The only evidence is the word of Mr. McKenna and his ranch journal entries, which were discredited. That was the only evidence. Mr. McKenna did testify that there was actual irrigation use, but his testimony was also directly contradicted by the testimony of the water commissioner, who visits the area regularly and visits the ranch at the end of each irrigation season and has never seen anything irrigated under the Sanchez ditch, as well as the testimony of neighbor Brett Corsetito, who drives by the McKenna ranch 3 times a week and testified that he has never seen anything irrigated with the Sanchez ditch. And while the journal entries themselves were discredited, the journal entry of Mr. McKenna from 2003 during that stage event does not indicate he was actually irrigating anything. It just says that he got water in the Sanchez ditch and sent the documentation to his water attorney. We would note also that this 2003 event occurred just a few years after a conversation between the water commissioner and Mr. McKenna and his attorney. At this time, the water commissioner warned Mr. McKenna that if he did not repair his ditch or he did not begin using it, it would be subject to abandonment in 2010. Therefore, we believe and the water court concluded that the 2003 event was staged in order to avoid abandonment, which is what the water commissioner tried to help this water user avoid.
Can I ask you a question? You started to cite us some old case law that it sounded like was going to go to the question what the intent to abandon means. Could you pursue that? Or at least I'll ask you the same question I ask opposing counsel, and that is,
Yes. What
do you take that to mean?
Yes, in case law and in statute, abandonment is defined as the intent to discontinue permanently the beneficial use of water.
And is that the same as you don't have the intent to put it to a beneficial use?
It does have permanence attached with it, so it's a little bit different. I think it's very much the same. I think when a court does make its findings of fact, that it must look sometimes at direct evidence and sometimes it must infer evidence. And that's one reason for which intent may be established by looking at an unreasonable period of non-use. And in statute for decennial abandonment proceedings, the engineers may establish to the court that if there has been a 10-year period of non-use of a water right, that does establish a presumption that there has been an intent to abandon a water right.
And so even if someone could come forward with evidence, believable evidence, that he hadn't put the water to a beneficial use and didn't intend to, but nevertheless wanted to keep the right because he might use it sometime in the future, or he wanted to sell it, or...
Right. They must, according to case law, have something more than a hope or a desire to put their water use to their water rights to beneficial use. They must have a specific reason to excuse their non-use. And in the case of McKenna, the water court didn't see any evidence in the record of even a general hope or desire to put his water rights to use. In fact, the 2003 event was nothing more than a self-serving declaration that's staged in order to mislead the division engineer and the water court. So there's no evidence of how he actually intended to use.
Possibly to mislead, and that's fine. But I guess the point I'm trying to get to is it seems to be a clear indication, though, that he didn't want to give up the right. So I take it what you're saying is, but that nevertheless would not be sufficient to rebut an intent to abandon.
That's correct. There's evidence that he didn't want to give up the right, but there's no evidence that he wanted to use the right. And there's particularly no evidence that he wanted to use the right for the beneficially decreed use of irrigation, which is what he must have the intent to do in order to rebut the presumption of abandonment.
Well, here's what I find interesting, because some cases talk about this. If at the time McKenna purchased this ranch, if it was abandoned, he can't revive it by hiring attorneys or doing anything else. So what do we have here? Do we have a finding that it was abandoned before McKenna acquired the ranch, or don't we?
I don't think we do, and we did not present to the water court that we do. The diversion records established that this water right had not been diverted since at least 1982, and McKenna purchased McKenna Ranch in 1991. So that's a 9-year period. And there is a stipulation in the trial management order indicating that the water rights were diverted in 1982. So it's the period after 1982 that the court examined. I do think it's possible that a substantial period of abandonment occurred prior to McKenna's purchase, beginning in 1982. The water court observed this fact as well. The water court observed that there had been a period of economic downfall for the McKenna Ranch prior to McKenna's personal acquisition. In 1991, it was uncertain, based on the conveyance records, exactly what, if any, and those are the water court's words, what, if any, water rights McKenna had purchased. So a significant period of that initial 10 years may have taken place prior to McKenna's acquisition.
Can I follow up on that? Just quite apart from whether it was abandoned before he took it over, we have a presumption of 10 years. But because everybody's concerned here with whether he actually tried to put the water to a beneficial use in 2003, it's clear that that's way beyond the 10-year period that you're showing as the presumption. I take it from that, then, that you're saying even that once the engineer has established and met the presumption of a 10-year, even if the applicant cannot come in and show, can rebut that he actually intended to use the water during that 10-year period, that wouldn't make any difference. As long as before the water is declared abandoned, he can show that he tried to put it to a beneficial use. Is that right?
I hope that I understand your question. What we see happening before the water court is there has to be established a 10-year period of use. If the water user can come in and either show that they actually did use their water right for beneficial purposes, or they had some intent that was more than a general hope or desire in that 10-year period, then they can rebut the presumption.
Right. Suppose they don't within that 10-year period, but they do before their water right is actually declared abandoned.
Then, pursuant to Haystack Ranches, the water right would have been abandoned. Once a water right has been abandoned, it cannot be revived by subsequent.
And so, without regard to this incident in 2003, were you saying the water, I mean, may not have, you may be saying it wasn't abandoned before he bought the property, but was it nevertheless abandoned if he didn't rebut the intent to abandon it during the 10-year period from 82 to 92?
So he did point to ranch journal entries that he said were evidence that he actually did use the Sanchez Ditch water rights during that earlier period, and the water court determined that those journal entries were untrustworthy.
And I guess all I'm trying to get to is, that being the case, do we need to discuss what happened in 2003? or once the water court found that there were those entries were not valid, for that 10-year period, does that end the determination?
I see what you're saying. The water court looked at the evidence as a whole in making its final determination using a preponderance of evidence standard. And I think the simplest outcome is simply to affirm the water court's determination as a whole.
Counsel, could I pick up on that saying, because now I'm a little bit confused, yes, about what 10-year period is being examined. When the engineer comes in with the abandonment list in 2010, is he looking backwards from 2010 to 2000? Is that the time period? Are we looking forward from 1982 to 1992? Are we looking for the first 10 years of Mr. McKenna's ownership from 1991 to 2001? Help me out. What's the proper 10-year period?
So the 10-year period is the statutory period used to establish presumption. And theoretically, the statute doesn't direct the engineers what 10-year period to use. In practice, the engineers look at the 10-year period leading up to the decennial abandonment. They also have discretion in some cases, as they did with McKenna in 2000. If they see that diversions were not made, but for some reason they believe the water user could have had an intent, they might go ahead and hold off on abandonment. They're not making a judicial determination, it's just an administrative call. And the engineers do tend to be relatively conservative in preparing their abandonment.
And so what happened in 2000? Presumably...
In 2000, nothing.
Nothing
the
happened.
Water commissioner testified that he simply didn't feel comfortable. He was a little bit more new to the job at that point, and he didn't want to willy-nilly abandon anybody's water rights if it might not be merited.
Thank you.
I see that I'm out of time. In light of the record on review and the arguments we've made today, we ask that you rule that the engineer's deadline compliance issue is not jurisdictional and was not properly preserved, and that you sustain the water court's findings of fact and affirm its order of abandonment. Thank you.
Thank you. You have some time on rebuttal, sir?
Yes, Your Honor. I did want just a couple of questions. And there's quite a bit of questioning early on about the due process nature of the July 1st deadline. And I do believe that there is due process that had to be served by the July 1st deadline. And the due process here is that, again, we're talking about abandonment. This is a very serious issue. And I think the July 1st deadline is mandated on the division engineer to not just wake up on June 30th and say, hey, I was directed to put together this list. I'm just going to throw it together and not investigate. In fact, investigation is required to have been done by the division engineer. So I think the July 1st deadline does serve a due process interest in having the division engineer appropriately investigate, think about, and determine what water rights are going to go onto that list.
Well, what about the no harm, no foul argument?
And I don't disagree that perhaps, and I guess we took it to the extreme, what if the division engineer made this list on July 30th, so long as he mailed it out by July 31st to all the water users and got it published by July 31st? There was some reason and intent that legislature wanted this list prepared by July 1st. And we can play that game with all of the other deadlines. We can say, well, what if McKenna just filed his protest 2 days afterwards? There's no harm in McKenna filing his protest 2 days after the statutory deadline. But there's a reason why we have this. This is for the orderly process of this abandonment proceeding.
Mr. Cho, is there any evidence in the record of any prejudice because of that?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Justice Hobbs was asking a little bit about this and what evidence was in the record. There were quite a few photographs presented by McKenna about the diversion of the record, or diversion of the Sanchez Ditch in the record. It shows quite an extensive dam placed into the Cacharras and quite a bit of water going down the Sanchez Ditch. It also showed irrigated fields with native grass being irrigated and water being spread out in a traditional flood irrigation manner across the field. So there was additional evidence presented by McKenna about actual irrigation underneath the Sanchez Ditch.
And there was no question that those photos were taken on that day. They weren't fabricated in any way?
Correct. They were taken on the day of May 7th and May 8th when Scott Davis completed the work on the Sanchez Ditch in 2003. There, when you look at the exhibit, the court, and this wasn't explained properly, it appears that the photos on the exhibits have a timestamp of 07-0503, 08-0503. I think the timestamp was using the military time code where they inverse the month and the day. So the water court looked at it and said the photos were taken on August 5th, 2003, and July 5th, 2003, when it was really taken on May 7th and May 8th of 2003. And that coincides with the exact time frame of when Scott Davis did the work on the Sanchez Ditch. And also talking about the work that Mr. Davis did on the Sanchez Ditch, he could not recall the exact nature of the work. He said that he thought he'd maybe thrown a tire into the river, but Mr. Burgotch and Mr. Kastner testified that a diversion dam was going to be necessary to divert water down the Sanchez Ditch. So a simple just throwing a tire in the river would not be a sufficient means to divert water out of the Cacharis and into the Sanchez Ditch.
Yet it does appear to be a sort of temporary diversion. Certainly you wouldn't, for 60 days a year that's in priority, if you were really using this water right, you'd have a more substantial diversion, would you not?
You would probably have to have a full span wing dam that probably stretched the width of the Cacharis to make an efficient diversion year round. That's correct, Your Honor. The point being here is that actual diversions were made. Just one other point I wanted to touch on in rebuttal. The water court didn't make any findings, Your Honor, about previous abandonment. That is, they didn't look at a time snap of 10 years and say, the abandonment occurred in this and we don't look any forward. I think the water court could have done that. The water court could have said, between this time frame, the water right was abandoned, and we don't need to look at anything else that happened in 1995 or 2003. The water court didn't do that. So I don't think the water court made any findings that there was a definitive 10-year period of non-use of the water. In closing, again, McKenna believes that the division engineer did not comply with its statutory duties and that the Sanchez Ditch should have been removed from the abandonment list. Mr. McKenna also asserts that the record does not support the funding of the abandonment of the Sanchez Ditch.
Right. Thank you very much. We appreciate the argument of both counsel, and this case will stand.